You're listening to Big on Small, the official small business podcast powered by Inspire Hub. I'm Carolyn Hart.
And I'm Samantha Castro.
We unpack the big ideas happening in small organizations for businesses, agencies, schools, towns, charities, and teams.
Because what we know is that good things come from small packages, and there's nothing small about doing good. Today, we're introducing you to one of the most resilient women we've ever met. Edie Hand is an acclaimed celebrity chef, author, philanthropist, speaker, and businesswoman. Edie is family-focused, and it's no wonder because her family tree includes the one and only Elvis Presley. Edie has traversed through life's biggest challenges, both in her personal and professional life as a small business owner. In today's episode, she'll discuss some of the tools she's created that has helped her to keep going when many other people would have stopped. Our story begins in the southern state of Alabama. It's the 1960s, and Edie lives with her family, her parents, Mr. and Mrs. Blackburn, and her three brothers, David, Terry, and Philip. Edie's the eldest, and she wouldn't get her sister Kim until later in life, but that was okay with her because she loves growing up surrounded by her brothers and the huge, and I mean huge, family that's on her mother's side, the Hoods.
My mom was one of 12. There were 12 children. My grandfather owned thousands of acres of land and was a lumberman and loggerman, as well as they grew cattle, corn, you know, the land. They worked off the land. My mentor was my grandmother, Alice, and my grandmother taught me how to turn hard things into beautiful situations.
Edie would need to know how to turn hard things into beautiful situations sooner than she would have thought. But I'm jumping ahead of myself. Edie loved her life and her brothers.
I grew up with my young brothers, David, Terry, and Philip Blackburn, and we would ride horses in the afternoon. If you can see that picture of these country kids getting off a yellow school bus, just dropping off your bags, changing clothes quickly, and running to the barn and getting your horse. And my horse was named Trigger, and my brother's horse was named Tonto, because we all love Long Ranger and, you know, and Dale Evans and Roy Rogers. And one of my brothers named his horse Polly because he was in love with our Avon lady.
And so wait, your brother's horse was named after the Avon lady and her name was
Polly.
In between riding horses, taking a trip to Grandmother Alice's farm for family gatherings and regular everyday life, Edie and her family would occasionally catch a glimpse of one family member in particular on their TV set, their cousin, Elvis Presley. Here's Carolyn.
Your entire family, you are part of the Presley family tree.
Yes.
Your cousin is Elvis Presley. I mean, you would have just known him as your cousin, but when was that moment where you started realizing, like, you know, cousin Elvis, he's turning into a big deal? When did that happen for you?
Well, he was a big star because he's, you know, he was 16 years older than me. So I had watched him as a young girl back then when it started. We would gather, you know, people would gather around television sets and get the whole family or the neighbors. If we were one of the fortunate ones that had a pretty large television, then he was on the Ed Sullivan Show. I was just a young girl and thought, wow, how cool is that? And I remember my grandmother saying, well, when you're old enough, we'll go visit. We'll go to Graceland. And I thought, oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be so freaking cool. I mean, just in today's standards, a trip to Graceland would be such a fun and interesting trip, you know, to see all of the memorabilia that there is now. But back in the time Edie's talking about, he's freaking living there. Every rock and roll fan then and now would probably do anything to get a chance to go visit Graceland. But even Edie, who was family, knew that Graceland was by invitation only. So when Grandma Alice said, we'll go to Graceland, Edie knew it would take some time before they got an invite.
You know, you didn't just show up like you did in the South. People just come to your house on Sunday to eat, and that whether they were invited or not. So I remember I was about 16 years old and I could drive. So my grandmother said, I have a surprise for you. I've got us an invitation to Graceland. And she said, you can't tell anybody else. And I went, okay, I won't tell anybody. So she and I leave Russellville, Alabama, and we drive to Memphis. And that was about, you know, back then, that was probably a little over 3 hours for us. But at that particular time, Elvis wasn't there the first time I got to go.
Elvis might not have been there that first time Edie visited, but she was surrounded by the strong women on that side of the Hackerhood family. Grandma Alice's sister, Minnie Mae, who was Elvis's grandma, was there that day, along with Edie's Aunt Delta. And boy, did these women show Edie a great time in Graceland.
It was the most wonderful time. I felt like a princess. I remember Delta taking me up to Elvis's room on the third floor that people don't go to. She showed me all of his clothes in his closet. It was like a department store. I went out back to horseback ride. You know, they had their own trailer court in the back and to office. I went to church with my other aunt, Nash. But for me as a young girl, that was fascinating. And, you know, I was gearing up to go to college in about a year. And I remember they invited me back. And that was when the first time I met Elvis. And I remember Uncle Vernon was there. And they introduced me as the smart, pretty cousin. And so they... You know, Elvis liked me, so that's one of the reasons I got to come back a lot, and that I wasn't interested in it. So they invited me to come to go to gospel concerts. But as a young girl, dolling up from Graceland and going there and people knowing where you came from, not many people would get to go in a limo, you know. I remember that he said, "Did you meet anybody you want to meet?" And I said, "Well, I saw this cute guy." And I told him he was a singer and they wouldn't know who it was. So he said, "Well, you can invite him the next night." And I said, "What? You can invite him to come over. We can check him out." Can you imagine? This guy asked, would I go out to eat? And I said, "Well, I can't, but I have to go back to my family's home." But I said, "You could come over and have, you know, a snack afterwards and say hello." I mean, just met the guy. She's probably thinking, "What in the world? She's going to meet her whole family the first time I meet the girl." And when I tell him where it is, he says, "Well, I don't know of anybody that lives there. That's Elvis's." But I said, "Well, that's where it is."
So your cousin Elvis was checking out your potential date and making sure that he was safe.
Yeah.
Because that would not be intimidating whatsoever to a young man.
For the record, I would definitely be intimidated. Anyways, boys weren't the main thing on Edie's mind. She had bigger plans, and everyone knew it, because she was about to be the first of Elvis's cousins to attend college. In 1969, Edie heads to Florence State University, now known as the University of North Alabama, to major in psychology and business and minor in theater. Edie's dream, her passion, was to be a Broadway star. But Edie, who had the famous Elvis Presley in her family, still knew that in order for her to be successful, she needed to listen to the practical side of herself every now and then, which is why she was majoring in psychology and business.
Being realistic, I was in Alabama. But when I realized I was very good at theater, and my drama coach, Gladys Shepherd, took me to New York City for the first time I ever got to go when I was a senior in college, and I got to see The Lion in Winter of Katharine Hepburn starring on Broadway. So she cast me in The Lion in Winter, and I portrayed Queen Eleanor. So it was my destiny, I felt, you know. My dream had been to spend my time in New York City as a Broadway star. That was my ultimate dream. But sometimes you get on a different horse, and life takes you in a different direction, and plan A becomes plan B.
During the senior year Edie was just talking about, she was working three jobs while attending school and living with her brother David, who was also attending Florence State. David invited Edie to watch his fiancé's play back home, and although she wanted to go, she was too tired and ended up staying behind. It was on that night that David fell asleep at the wheel and died in an accident not far from Grandma Alice's farm. He was only 19. Edie's path changed that night, and it would continue to change and challenge her, because as much as I want to say that this is the worst thing that happened, the loss of a brother, it wasn't. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. After college, instead of moving to New York, Edie decides to stay in Alabama, closer to her family.
I actually came to Birmingham, Alabama. I was doing a lot of things before, you know, just to find out what was me. I was doing local theater, regional theater. I got a job with a medical company and with a local NBC affiliate, which led me to New York through promotions on NBC and CBS. I worked different things at different stations. Back then you could do that, like, you know, if you did a noonday show or if you did consulting work. So I did a lot of diverse things.
Edie was hustling. During this time, she marries, has her first and only son named Link, and in 1976 starts her first small business, an advertising agency called Hand in Hand Advertising.
I started first out of my home with $500. And then we moved to Daphne, Alabama, and I had clients in the Birmingham area and in South Alabama. We bought a lovely home on the golf course, Link's father and I. So I had an office, and he helped with some of the media buying from his work. And I had two ladies that worked with me, one in Birmingham and one there in Daphne. And so that began the hand-in-hand advertising that grew into something far larger than I ever imagined, because one of my first clients was from my hometown of Sunshine Pet Food, which was a national pet food product, and also boutique shops like the Village Shop that I worked there when I was in college. All these people were giving me work. And then again, with a chain of Oldsmobile Chevrolet car dealerships that from Birmingham and Mobile and on all over the country. So I had to hire more people. That's when we formed the Hotspots, because I needed help. So these three other men, we all did what we did best. One would write, I would write and perform, and Link's father would sell, and we had another guy selling. So we built a team between two companies.
Hand in Hand Advertising is the small business that helped Edie launch into the other aspects of her career as a radio and television personality, an author, a speaker. But it wasn't as easy as Edie might have made it seem. At the age of 26, just a few years after David's death, and at the beginning of starting her agency, Edie found out that she had a rare kidney disease and cancer. After a fierce four-year recovery, she was back into the swing of things. But life pushed her again, and in 1984, her brother Philip died in a car accident. And you may be thinking, goodness, losing one brother is horrific, but two? That's unimaginable. But I'm sorry to say, friends, it wasn't over yet.
My brother Terry was stricken with an aneurysm in the middle of the brain, and we care gave for him, my mom, my sister, and me for over 5 years. And he was losing all of his motor skills, and he asked me before he lost his motor skills, would I come and help him on his last ride to tell him the stories of what it was like when we were kids. And God allowed that in my life, for that to happen. It changed me forever to experience that and to bury those three young boys. It was the black pearl in my life. Little did I know I was growing up with those boys, and it would set the tone for my future.
Edie's future and what she does after losing her three brothers and fighting her own battles is coming up after the break. This episode of Big on Small is brought to you by us, InspireHub, creators of the award-winning iHub app, the small business digital experience platform that allows you to rapidly build websites, apps, and portals to help your small business thrive. Long before the pandemic, InspireHub was working 100% remotely and creating a platform specifically to help under-resourced small businesses engage better. With InspireHub on your side, you'll receive our award-winning digital experience platform, world-class branding, personalized training, and the trusted consulting you need to take your small business to the next level. We even wrote a book on how to engage in this remote world. Loving Remote is a free ebook to help you navigate this new digital landscape. Learn more about how InspireHub can help you build relationships with the people who help build your small business, including customers, employees, and partners. Go to inspirehub.com/remote to learn more today. That's inspirehub.com/remote. I I think it's safe to say at this point in the podcast that Edie is a freaking warrior. Losing all three brothers that she grew up with, you may be thinking, how did she keep going? How did she continue? Here's Edie.
All of this in my life of growing up, there were just as many joys as there were darkness. And that's part of, I think, as an entrepreneur and as a person finding their own grit to get up and going was, I think when you go through tough things to share with anyone, if you learn how to detach and that you can keep going. You see, I never really grieved them all, but I would detach and do what I had to do.
I think one of the things that I appreciate about what you taught me and shared with me is that you took all of that pain and that being able to detach from it, but then you funneled it into beautiful projects like your book, The Last Ride. I mean, I wept when I read that book. It's just so incredibly beautiful. And, you know, I think that it's an extraordinary gift that you've had where you've taken this, all these difficult moments, and you actually were able to turn it into this gift back to the world.
Thank you. I think that everyone has to find some way to keep going because life, you're not going to get out of here without something happening that's not tough to deal with. And it's how you, the tools perhaps you've been able to have that you might not even know is within you, that your mom, your dad, a sibling, a friend, a stranger could give you. I remember even during a dark time when I needed someone and I was afraid to call someone. And sometimes we're afraid of things that aren't really, or we have a fear in us. And I think that's the evil dark side of us that wants us not to get up.
One way Edie chooses to look at her life is through what she calls the pearls of life, which draws on her spiritual belief to help her define certain moments in life. You might have caught one pearl right before the break when Edie said losing her brothers was the black pearl of her life. Well, there's different types of pearls Edie has to describe other moments.
To me, life is a string on which we hang our pearls. And we all have been given pearls of life. We just have to recognize them through acts of kindness. Now, this I learned from my grandmother, Alice. So when I was writing and thinking of how I could give back for a large women's event at a church, I wanted to find scripture that could go with some different colors of pearls that I had learned about. I looked up and I found in 1 John 1:19, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and righteous to forgive us. And, you know, it cleanses us from all unrighteousness. Well, that's what I thought starting over for the white pearls, the yellow pearls for stains in 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away, and behold, the new has come. Then the pink pearls in life. Now, anyone that knows me knows how much I love to laugh. You know, I looked it up of in Psalms 144:15 about how important it is to be happy among people. And no matter how dark it is, I can get out. Honestly, this may be weird to people out there, but I actually have a long stem cigarette holder with rhinestones on it. And I'll put a pretend cigarette on the end of it. I have a few of Phyllis Diller, the late comedian's boas. I would wear her boa and I'll have my bow and I'm going, hi. And I talk to myself, you know, and I do these funny little things and it'll make me laugh at myself. And Phyllis did that. She said, look, if you can talk to yourself and laugh with yourself, you can get over it.
So these pearls of life, which Edie had learned and developed from her grandma Alice, was helping her move forward. If you're interested in reading more about the pearls of life, we have all of the pearls listed on the podcast post for this episode. Another thing Edie did to keep moving forward was she established her own foundation in her brother's memory, the Edie Hand Foundation.
When people think you have a foundation, you're just loaded with millions of dollars. It's not always the case. What mine is I sell books. It is my tithes that I give back to help kids with cancer. I also help with a Heal Alabama program and with kids here at Children's Hospital that's tied in with the Miracle Kids around the country. And I think that everyone has to find a way to give back in their community. So that's what I have done with writing books, is encourage other people to give back in a way in their community. And I do that through my foundation.
I will admit that I was one of the people who always thought if you had a foundation, you must be loaded. But in talking with Edie, I came to realize that that's not always the case. I asked her where this feeling to give back came from, because I was interested to know if it correlated to her having survived cancer or not.
I was doing it long before I had the cancer. I first learned that from Elvis when I was 16 years old, and I remember being there when he gave a yacht to Danny Thomas to raise money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And his middle daughter, Terry Thomas, is one of my dearest friends, and she is my son's godmother, and she lives there in Beverly Hills, and she's the founder of, with her father, of the Country Kids, that a lot of these country artists raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for kids with cancer there in the Nashville, Memphis area. That came from that, and always I thought, wow, if I could grow up and help do something like that. Well, I didn't have that kind of wealth, but I did have those resources. And I also did country music Christmas specials. And, you know, people donate their time, and we all would get together to air this to promote St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. You either raise the money or you raise a lot of awareness for them so people could directly give money to the hospital, just like they do with FedEx for St. Jude Golf Tournament. We just were another arm of raising awareness and raising certain amount of funds. So that's always been a part of my life. And because I'm a numerous cancer survivor, it's very dear to me to help find cures. Yeah.
Hold up. Play that again.
That's always been a part of my life. And because I'm a numerous cancer survivor, it's very dear to me to help find cures. Yeah.
A numerous cancer survivor. So yes, not only did Edie battle cancer at 26 while starting her small business agency, she did it numerous times throughout her career. One of the times Carolyn actually was able to reminisce with Edie about.
One of the things that I know, because I have been with you now for over a decade as your friend, and also you have had the wonderful gift of you mentoring, is there might be this idea that, well, of course she had a successful career in an agency because, you know, she had these great opportunities having the Presley family and Elvis as her cousin and meeting these wonderful people. But what I realized is that there's a lot of you. First of all, there's a lot of family and all, you know, many, many are talented. Not all have gone into entertainment, but you had the success you had with the agency and the book writing and all the materials because you were hustling the entire time. I mean, I need everybody to put a picture in your mind. It's probably, I guess it must have been about 10 years ago. We're in Nashville. We're at the Grand Ole Opry. And I remember, you know, I am in my 30s at the time. And, you know, I won't tell your age, but you were ahead of me in age, fighting cancer. And I remember chasing you down the hall of Grand Ole Opry. And it was like that for 3 days, Edie. I mean, you had phones ringing off of you and we were running. Actually, I want everybody to understand this. I'm not exaggerating when I, you know, you see in the movies like, oh, and they say they were, the person was, you run from meeting to meeting while you're fighting cancer. And I remember I said to my husband that I'm like, I cannot keep up with her. My husband's like, do not tell anybody this. She's older than you and she's fighting cancer and you can't keep up with her. And I said, you don't understand. She's nuclear powered. And I remember I said that to you. You said, well, actually, technically, I am right now because I'm on chemo. And you showed me the little box that you had on you.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, if that was you in the middle of arguably one of the biggest fights, and you, and by the way, you did it multiple times, won the fight against cancer, multiple times. How many times have you fought and won against cancer now?
Four times. I actually did a book with one of my oncologists called Cancer, the Unexpected Gift. And I can tell you that there were many years I was on chemo by mouth, but There's so many wonderful things today. And I am knocking on my another decade. And I tell them all, I said, I think I got about 10 more good years left in me. But, you know, I will be doing what I do with young, vibrant women like yourself and business women until the Lord calls me home, because we all have a purpose on this earth. And I think mine is to share other women's stories. Now, I've told you this many times, that you are your own woman of true grit, and that I love this of great resilience is transformative, that you certainly inspired that to happen. And I've learned a lot from you too, Carolyn. And that is part of, as you grow older, is life lessons, is that you can be the mentor and the teacher, but when the teacher becomes a student. So I have been a student of yours, and I have observed you and watched you and seeing your influence grow. And I see that the Lord has given me that senior influence to keep going. As long as He wants to use me, I'm here. And this is one way of doing this, is through the word and through storytelling, and that God has enabled me through great men of support, two strong women like us, that, you know, I've now writing screenplays with talented men in Hollywood. Now, where in the world would that come from but only something greater than me? You know, I'm a humbled person.
You are my example of who I want to be when I grow up, finally. And
I guess you'll never grow up.
I hope not. And well, you know, I do. But, you know, the interesting thing is you were directly involved in just deciding that you were going to help me. And I mean, you dragged me onto television shows. You shoved me in front of people. You told me to keep up. Darling, you need to keep up. You told me at one point, I was in a job at the time, and I was explaining to you how I felt. I remember I just said, I just feel like every time I'm trying to move forward, I'm dragging people with me sometimes. And you said, well, darling, that's just because you're in the wrong pack. You gotta get the pack that can run with you. Right. I remember you then not only did you say that, but then you said, and we're gonna start right now. And I think one of the most beautiful things when we're talking about small business and growing, you know, our listeners are small business owners, and they need to understand that you are a small business owner. I am a small business owner. This isn't something where suddenly one day you are, you know, like what we see in the news, which is you become this unicorn and you can just coast off into the sunset. I mean, it's still, you're grinding it out because this is what your passion is and you're pursuing it. So, you know, when you hear you talk, you know, the conclusion might be that you've had a lot of personal tragedy, but you've never really struggled in business. So, you know, set the listener straight, Miss Edie Hand, about business struggles, because you do have success. But I know we talk about it a lot over the years. We actually laugh about how if people actually knew the behind the scenes footage of what it looks like, you know, to look successful, to be successful, not just to look successful, but to have, because people go, wow, you're doing all these amazing things, and they have no idea the sacrifice. You know, can you tell us a couple stories just about, you know, where you were really like, what am I doing here?
Well, there was a time in my life out there, I want you guys to know, that even when you can be a CEO of a company and you can be at the top of your game, and you get sick and someone betrays you and takes a lot of money from you, and you get beaten down and you think, can I get back up again? And you think, I'd like to go somewhere where nobody knows my name, really knows about me, and I just need a break. I want you to know that I actually took a job as a receptionist, and they didn't know who I was. And I did this with a large company that my niece, she was a business graduate. She said, you just need to get out. They don't have to know you. I'm not going to give them your resume, of course. But if you'll just do this for me, I'll make a little bit of money for getting you there. And would you do this for 90 days? I said, have you lost your mind? And no. And I thought, I'm going to do this and just see what happens. So I actually did it. This was for a very powerful financial company. And I'd been there maybe 2 weeks, and I was late one night staying and doing stuff. And finally, the CEO came out and he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, nobody works like this, and nobody's this organized, and nobody gets this much done in this short. What is your full name?" He didn't even know my name. I said, "Well, I'm Edie Hand." "Edie Hand." I said, I'm just here as a temp, just to help you out for a few months. It's all good. I'm older, and this is just kind of fun for me. I just need to get out. I've lost a lot of people in my life to death. I just need to get out." "Okay." Well, it wasn't 30 minutes. He comes back out. He said, "I Googled you." "Oh my God. What are you doing?" And then he said, "Look, if you can do this and do that, I'll give you an office. And you can do this on the side." But it was one of those things where I did it for a few months, but I got sick again. The cancer came back. And I tell you this, people, listen carefully. There are mean people everywhere. You have to be above it. There was a guy and a lady that didn't like it, that they all liked me and that I was so successful. And I was sick, really sick. And a few mornings I was late, but I was downstairs throwing up. I mean, throwing my guts up. But I was committed. And I remember I called up this girl I was talking to. She said, "You want me just to sign you in or something?" And I said, "Yes." Well, they thought I was asking favors. And they said, "Well, maybe you don't belong here." And so that the first time ever I worked in something like that, and the first time ever I was let go. And you know what? It taught me a big lesson. I didn't tell them I was sick until it was over. And then I started throwing up, and they went in, they saw, and they said, "Oh my God, you're sick." I said, "Yes, I am. My cancer's back." I asked him, could I talk to him the next day? And I did. I said, "Look, it's just a life lesson. When you're sick, if anybody's out there, if anything happens to you, it's not so bad to tell people the truth that you're really sick. And so just always be aware that if you always are straight up, or to say why I'm really late or what's going on, no matter where you are, because you can bet they felt like they didn't feel very good about themselves." But you know what? I never put that company down. I never put those people down, and always take the high road, because it never behooves you to run a company or another person down, because I was at fault for not telling them I was sick. But I learned a valuable lesson.
Telling coworkers where you are in life and saying, "Hey, I'm not feeling my best self today," or "I'm needing to take it easy because I have XYZ going on in life right now," is such a vital part of good communication within any organization. But it's especially vital to small businesses, because your biggest assets are your people. We've said it time and time again on this show, and we'll keep saying it because it's so important. Take care of your people, and they'll take care of you and your business. So yes, Edie struggled in business. A business partner she had trusted had betrayed her in the late 2000s and taken a significant amount of money, leaving her to the point where all she wanted to do was start fresh. One of the ways she healed from this particular instance was not only taking that temp job as a receptionist, but also she channeled her previous experience into another book, written with friend Dale Brackage in 2010 and aimed at helping other small business owners.
It's called ABCs of Selling with Etiquette. I wrote the etiquette arm, and, you know, we had a fair amount of success with it, and it allowed us to be able to help businesses, small businesses, learn these simple ABCs of selling. You can't sell anything if you don't have good manners. I tell them all the time that manners never go out of style. I can even give a great example of some of the things that I wrote about with the ABCs of this. Is I taught my son to have great manners and to always open the doors for women.
And I can attest, after being at events, that he absolutely does that. It doesn't matter if it's a child or a senior, they're getting the door opened for them, whether they want it or not.
Yeah. And Jimmy Kimmel, Link does some work with Jimmy Kimmel. They say, hey, Link's always opening the door, walking the girls to the car. He says, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I'm very proud of that. I see people seeing his genuine heart. That is very important to me. And so that's what this book of ABCs of Selling is about, genuineness and kindness.
And so give us the story, the advice. Tell them the story about the etiquette.
Well, hey, here's one thing you need to know is that you have to create your life from the inside out. And when you reach out to a customer, say, for example, you know, you've got to know something personal. You need to take time to do your research to understand. I keep a journal of who I talk to. I know their spouse's name. I want to know their kids' names. If I spend a lot of time doing work that with them, that's what I'm doing. They need to know that your caring about them is real. That is K, and having that kind of knowledge, I think, is golden. It's simply free for the taking if you'll just do that. Of course, risk comes with all of it. You know, you got to know the proper way to hug somebody. Do you know the proper way to hug somebody, Carolyn?
Is that the side hug? Yes. Side hug. You know that they teach you that in church. That is like a Southern church tradition. I remember I was with somebody, they didn't know what the side hug was. And I was like, you don't understand the side hug. And now, of course, now with COVID, there's no hugging of any kind. But when there was hugging, it was always the side hug. That's appropriate.
That's true. And it's so true. And I'll say this again to small business. R is for relationships. People like to do business with their friends, but people want to know that you're sincere, honest, you have integrity. Look, I've lost money to maybe one friend, but most of them I've made money with. And it's when you give that respect and it flows both ways, that relationship is, it makes such a difference in the perspective. I tell people all the time is, it's like, I write about in these books of having a lot of passion. You got to let them see your passion to work to do it. Pursuit. How do you pursue to put your proposals together? Do you do the right thing? Your perseverance. Never give up on something you really want. You may have to go to a plan B sometime, but never give up. I love this that I found once, and you know, and Dale Carnegie was one of the best when he said, we should be aware of the magic that's contained in a name. Everyone loves to hear their name. I'd say, Carolyn, thank you so much for letting me be on your podcast today, you know, and you realize that person that you're dealing with, sometimes somebody else might look at them and never look them in the eyes. Always look that person in the eyes and talk to them. Connect. Connection is a beautiful thing. And understand too that, you know, we all have territories, just like I told you, in that position that I lowered myself to do, that I thought I was lowering myself to do, but it turned out being something really good for me, a really great life lesson that you just can't imagine. You know, a friendship is priceless that I got out of it, and a business relationship that was priceless. I would have had neither one of those, and they both made a profound impression in my life. But see, the person that was so territorial, that didn't look at all the good I did and brought, but tried to nitpick a couple little things. Remember that of your employees. There could be a reason why that person is being late a couple of times, or if you're just watching them, why don't you bring them in and say, could you tell me what's going on?
You're giving away my secrets because Samantha works with me. So now she realizes, oh, now I know where Carolyn's getting it from. Because that's exactly what I do. Because, you know, you and I talked about seeing the whole picture,
yeah,
not losing sight of the long game, understanding that today's person who maybe stumbles and falls can be the person who gets the biggest deal next year. And do you want that person getting the big deal for your competition? Or do you want them doing that for you? Because they're going to win. They're not always going to fail. You think, oh, they've had a bumpy season. But, you know, the person that has that leader come to them and say, look, I'm going to walk along with you during this dark season. I mean, the loyalty, the motivation that we feel towards leaders who invest in us when we're weak. I mean, there's no comparison. We'll run through walls in the future for them. You know, I remember I had a leader do that for me, one of my first mentors, and I had a loss in my life at the time. I just started the job and I wasn't coping well. And, you know, so he just gave me an additional 2 weeks because I needed it. And of course, I worked for him for years. And whenever they needed overtime, whenever they needed someone to work a holiday, whenever they needed somebody to work a weekend, guess who was the first person at the front of the line? Me.
Yep.
Because I remember what he did for me. And so I wanted to repay that kindness. Pretty simple.
And see, and another thing is, your receptionist in a major corporation is one of the key people. They talk with your clients. They meet your clients when they come in. Even this CEO said, I've never, ever in all of my career had anyone like you be here. It was the telephone manners. All of you out there never said, yeah, don't pick the phone. Yeah, okay, you know, hello, how can I help you? Who would you like to talk to? At work, it always comes with a professional mannerism. No matter who you are, if you're the one answering the phone and you know, hi, this is Edie Hand. How can I help you today? A kindness in your voice that comes across and a different perspective, I think, for young people in the business or even is that, you know, sales can be hot or cold. And most people don't want to be pushed into something. And we're in desperate times right now. This is crazy, crazy, unprecedented times. And people do desperate things in desperate situations, just like me not telling how sick I was or different things is because I thought, I don't want to let anybody down. But you only let yourself down if you don't build those healthy relationships and be honest with everybody. And when you're having a bad day, and somebody knows it, you know, if you can at least use good psychology and say, I see you're having a bad day. What can I do for you? Or we all get overwhelmed. How can I lighten your load? Just like you even did for me on a particular instance. And you said, let me take this and make this better for you.
Manners go a long way. I'm interested to know from you, our listeners, if you've had any experiences like Carolyn or Edie just shared. Have you had a boss or coworker take you over to the side when you're in a tough moment in life and say, hey, I got this for you. Don't worry about it. What was that like for you? And what impact did that have on you? We'd love to hear your story. Email us or call us at 1-844-967-2428. We're getting close to present day with our story now. All throughout this time, Edie is also writing, publishing, and establishing the project that she's most passionate about, Women of True Grit.
The Women of True Grit brand is my most promising brand. I know that this book will be my legacy of telling great women's stories, not someone always that's a top executive of a company in a famous person, say, for example, like a Meredith Vieira or the Mandrell sisters, or if it's someone that knows different people for different reasons.
Edie released the Women of True Grit book in 2010 with co-author Tina Savas. And there are quite a few big names that contributed to this book that you'll probably recognize.
They certainly would recognize Dr. Maya Angelou. She gave me a poem to use and told me that phenomenal woman to be able to use it when I did my Women of True Grit. Dr. Judy Kuryensky, who is a person that was on ABC Radio for over 20 years and has worked in teaching psychology at Columbia University. Meredith Vieira, who was a voice on 60 Minutes and then on NBC Today and, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. The Mandrell family started in country music way back when their mother and father started. Mary Eisenhower, very honored. Her grandfather was our president. And I love, because hers is about philanthropy. Also, Brigadier General Wilma Vaughn, she was the first woman decorated as a Brigadier General. Now, they might not know her name as a household name, but they do know the Women's Memorial that she raised personally $10 million to build this of women's history that have given their lives to our country that sits in the gateway of Arlington Cemetery.
Edie took her Women of True Grit around the country, speaking on not only her stories, but also sharing these women's stories. Most recently, Edie was retained to write an in-house FedEx Women in Leadership book that is inspired by her Women of True Grit brand. More details coming soon on this book. There are more Women of True Grit projects from Edie that are currently in development, and we'll be sure to share updates with the Big on Small family as they unfold. Edie continues her speaking, writing, and even moves more into the entertainment industry when she establishes Hand in Hand Entertainment with her son Link. Through this latest business venture, she's working to tell her story and others on the big screen. Here's Carolyn.
One more story about perseverance, because I'm just thinking about the documentary that you did, which was the story of The Last Ride and your story, right? But that, getting that done, that was like, how many years was that? Was that 10 years?
It was 10 years. Dave Johnson is one of the finest. He's written over 500 screenplays, worked with Warner Brothers, one of the top in the business. And God allowed us to meet at an event, a fundraiser in California. And so all I'm saying is that he said to me, he says, you know, you really need something else to show, you know, some type of promo. And I thought, I'm going to do a short documentary. Now, I was going to have to pay for this myself, but there was a team of people that were willing to work for bare bones. A friend of mine that had a production group here. So I called my son and asked, would he do the narration? And I asked Victoria, would she write a song to go with the book? And she wrote A Better Tomorrow. Because she said, I always hear you talking about, you know, things can be better. They will get better. And in reading your book, and the other two folks that helped her in writing, and she sang it. We filmed it, and we had a family gathering like we used to do on the 4th of July, that Elvis came, sometimes just Elvis's dad, Vernon, and Aunt Minnie, and Aunt Delta, and all of them came. But my uncles would make music on the front porch, so we recreated that. And I will tell you, having someone from my college days to talk about what it was like, that my dream was to be an actress. And to all the deaths, all the losses, all the different portrayals changed my destiny. But I made it work by the help of God. And I can tell you, I had not grieved everybody's death. And my father was living when we did this several years ago. I just lost my father, the last of my family, this past fall to Alzheimer's. But what a wonderful thing to see so many of my family come together. But after that, I really lost it. I grieved 40 years of letting go. I was on the floor here in my lovely two-story colonial home out in the country, and I really, it brought me to my knees, and I grieved all of those losses.
And I think that's interesting, because you and I talked about that moment and how being a workaholic, that it's a drug that numbs us.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how long you try to bury it, there does come a reckoning, is what you and I were talking about. And, you know, at some point, the natural human experience is that we need to grieve that loss in our personal lives, in our professional lives, because it opens us up to healing, real healing.
Yes, it is. I totally believe that I suppressed all of this pain my entire adult life. The reason I've dealt with chronic illness and numerous battles with cancer and other health issues, and probably the unhealthy relationships I did have, or the no tolerance for excellence, was because I had never allowed myself to grieve or to forgive. And I can tell you, you have to forgive eventually. And you have to grieve. And I have done both.
And, you know, I think on the thing of forgiveness, which I am learning, because we don't really talk about the need for forgiveness in business. You know, it really isn't. It's one of those things where maybe you got fired from a job, maybe a leader did something to you, but we tend to think about forgiveness as really something that we apply in our personal lives. And we don't think about all the wounds that can happen when business betrayals happen and those relationships happen. And I think one of the lessons I have really learned, honestly, recently about forgiveness is there's a difference between forgiving someone and also coming into a place of acceptance. And I always thought that you had to have them at the same time. But what I've learned is that you can actually forgive somebody and truly say, I forgive you, but still not be at a place of real acceptance in your life, which I did not know that until a friend was like sharing with me a journey she had been on. And that ability to forgive whatever the people are that you have you worked around. I mean, I love what you say. At the end of the day, we're humans, we're in relationship, and it doesn't really matter how the betrayal comes in, it wounds. And how important it is after you've gone through a struggle to find that place of forgiveness and wholeness. And I think that's just such an important lesson.
It is. And I'll tell you this out there, if you think no matter what season you're in, you can have a dream, you can have a different dream, and never settle for second best for yourself. I had thought I would probably grow old alone. I am older, but I'm not in my twilight years yet. I hope I get to get there. I will live longer than any of my family, if I do, my immediate family. But I can tell you that God's just not done with me yet. So I believe that this is just the beginning of this season, and that I feel greatness coming. And I tell anyone, it doesn't matter how crazy these times are. We have to push through. You may not be doing what you want to do, but you do what you need to do to get to that next level. No matter where in this world you live, there is someone that will give you a hand up if you stay the course. That I believe.
What I love about you is the reinvention that you continue to do. And at a time in life when people are saying, I'm going to tap out and whatever that, like, you don't believe in retirement. Like, your whole thing is, until the good Lord takes me from this earth, it's on. Like, we are in a full out ride to get everything out of what we can. And I know that has certainly influenced me, because I used to think to myself, you know, I don't want to retire, but so many people would tell me that's ridiculous. And I remember when I met you, and I kind of whispered that to you. I was like, you know, I don't actually know if I ever want to retire. And you were like, absolutely not. You know, you keep going until your time here is done. What would you say to small business owners who want to quit?
You know, listen, everybody, we're in the middle of COVID. We're in the middle of a pandemic. If someone that's almost 70 years old can interview 18 wonderful executive leaders from FedEx around the world by Zoom that didn't even know what Zoom was until that, and I had to learn about Zoom and WebEx and on, and how to record and then write, you can do anything you want to do. I tell people all the time, you is for upselling, and you need to upsell everything you're doing. From one thing that you do, there is another opportunity of branding or reinventing yourself. And as long as your mind is sharp and you've built healthy relationships, it is the key is healthy relationships. I can probably count on one hand people that probably don't like me. And, you know, I, in these 40 something years, and, you know, I didn't do everything right. There's some things I do regret, but I learned from those lessons. I learned from each of those people that maybe I didn't make so happy, or they didn't make me so happy, is that I chose to reflect and learn from it one way or another. There's some things you cannot change, but there's one thing for sure that you have, and it's choice. And if you want to have more in life, you've got to seek more. And one of the greatest keys I can give anyone here of your listeners is to listen. If you really listen what that client wants, or for example, here I'm doing a piece for a pastor at his church. He'd written a book and he thought he could do a movie. But I said, oh no, you will lose a lot of money right now. You need to tell your story. Tell your story from your heart. People have to understand why you're passionate about what you're writing and what your message is. People have to buy into who you are. And any of you out there, they have to buy into who you are before they will invest their money in you to grow into a story or a product, or if you're going to help them to brand something they have, or if you've got an idea. Be confident enough in your ideas to go and ask. If you do not ask, you will never know. And if you don't have all the courage you need to get it done, ask people that understand other things. If you need a technology person, if you need someone to pretty up your presentation, whatever you need, if you can go in with confidence, you can usually come out with something that gives you a great result. It's just doing those basic things. Carolyn, that's what I'm telling you. If you want it, you find the solutions and you get it done and you get your grit up and you never let it down.
To learn more about Edie and explore her books, visit ediehand.com. That's Edie, E-D-I-E, hand.com. To watch her documentary, The Last Ride, visit hhentertainment.biz. That's hhentertainment.biz. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Big on Small, and if you did, be sure to subscribe, follow us wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a review. It lets us know how we're doing and how we can make this a better podcast.
Visit bigonsmall.biz to join our community of small businesses and find helpful resources. To learn more about what we talked about in today's episode, read show highlights, and more, go to bigonsmall.biz/podcast and visit the post for this episode.
We're working on new stories where we need your help. Call and tell us how you've had to make small or big changes to the way you do business since COVID started. The number to call is 1-844-967-CHAT. That's 1-844-967-2428. We listen to each and every message. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Big on Small. The Big on Small podcast is powered by InspireHub, creators of the award-winning iHubApp digital experience platform. Big on Small is produced and directed by me, Samantha Castro.
And me, Carolyn Hart. Additional support by Sue Braden, Richard Brashear, Audrey Duncan, and Sue Jenks. Music by Noah Smith and mixed by Samantha Castro. For the full list of credits, visit the podcast page for this episode. Thanks for listening.